Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're going to start off positive this morning about finding the positive in a negative work environment. Not all work environments are negative with the feds, but some are. Anyway, to lead us in that positive discussion is the positive person, Nan Seamer, president of Breakers. What is Breakers?
Breakers Consulting. I do a lot of communication-based consulting with the government and private sector clients, negotiation and media.
Okay. And Nan is about as shy as last week's guest, Lester Austin. And John will remember Lester. And Nan, Lester is anything but shy. Anyway.
Oh, well, good.
Good morning, John. John Elliott, retired Fed, former seminar presenter, and federal benefits
strategist.
I
hesitate to use the word expert because you can always learn something new. But strategist works for me.
Okay.
Just don't call me specialist. That's too broad.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty, Nan. Finding the positive and a negative. This would apply to anybody else as well. So although our audience, I'm sure, is 99.9% feds, they could know somebody in the other world. Anyway, you said something as I walked into the studio. Now, what are we going to be looking for? Two people to call in.
If there's anybody who wants to call in, this is a great show to do it. Because I'll say, I've been working in one way or another with the federal government since probably the 1970s when I worked with the National Park Service. And I've worked with a lot of government agencies, both as a consultant and as a contractor and as an employee. And I have never seen things as bad as it is right now for morale for federal employees. And this is across the board. Maybe there are some absolutely wonderful offices where they feel like it's a party every day to go to work. But overall, I've got to say that is not my experience right now. My experience is that things are, for a variety of reasons, and we'll talk about that. But if anybody has any suggestions on how to make the workplace more fun, more bearable, and more, you know, you remember those days when you come skipping into work because you're happy to be there. There are a lot of people that are dragging themselves into work right now.
Okay,
so we're going to talk about that.
We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's about 10 after 10 a.m. Eastern Time, April 2nd, 2012. We'll be on close to an hour. Please call us if you're listening to it other than this time and date. Don't call us because we won't be here, but you can email us, and we'll talk about the email in a while. So let's start off. Evidence of morale is very low in some government agencies.
Right.
Well, why do we say that?
Well, you've got to look at what the problem is, what the environment is right now for government employees. A lot of them feel like they are being the scapegoat. It's almost like a post-recession recession in government. A lot of government employees haven't had a raise in a few years. There's a salary freeze. A lot of them are feeling really stuck in their positions, although there is some good news, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But more important than anything is we also have an environment with politically where a lot of people are turning to the government and saying, you're the one that needs to cut your budget. And in an election year, when they talk about the economy and all the places where you can save money, when that you're talking to politicians, the one place they can cut is government. So there's a real bullseye on the back of government right now that says we're going to cut your budgets, we've frozen your salaries. And that the public perception of government employees, coupled with the fact that they don't feel appreciated because they haven't had a salary bump in a while, just makes things a little bit tough in a lot of the offices right now.
Okay, could I do a little reversal here?
Because we're
not totally different than them as a contractor.
That's true.
We just did a bid today, and they basically said low price wins.
Well, and I will tell
and
you.
And listen, I'm not whaling the blues. It gets my juices going. Okay, how do we deliver the same quality service and product at the lowest price? Because we don't want to lose the bid, and we want to continue working, keeping the troops working, etc. But that's the way I look at it. Okay, how do I do it?
And I do, and I understand that too, because Bob, I'm a contractor as well, and a huge federal contract, huge from my standards. which was a primary source of income for me. I got contractors first because they don't want to be cutting employees in their offices. And that's awfully, as you and I both know, that's awfully hard to do in government, too, is to just cut employees. So they're dealing with a lot of attrition and not filling those positions in some cases to cut those budgets. But yes, the bullseye's on the back of the contractors, too. We both feel it.
Okay, but let's switch back to the employees. Okay, I come to you for advice, and you do provide counseling, don't you?
I do. Oh, I do.
Okay.
I do counseling and contracting, and I help people through transitions. That's part of the communications part, and that's obviously what I do with you as well. The communications part is where I do so much government work, and that's why I brought that in to play.
I help people through the career transitions. I'm not thrilled that I haven't got a raise. I still kind of like my job, but my coworkers are down. What could I do to bang the drum? I want to be the drum major or majorette.
What would you do, Bob? And John, too, what would you do in your workplace if it was up to you to be the morale officer?
I am kind of the morale officer at my other world. I won't say I am the only one, but I tried to put on a happy face. Even I'm a tax accountant. And if any time that you don't have a happy face, it's now. And why am I here? Because I like it so much here and I can get away from there. Not really. But, I say, listen, it could be worse. We could be looking for work.
That's true.
And let's make the boast. Let's try to buff the rough edges. And again, in my world, so I'll pretend I'm a Fed and doing the same thing.
And you don't have a budget for it. Think about it in those terms, too, because the idea of, oh, well, we can do this and that and we've got some extra money. You know, right now I don't hear, especially with the continuing resolutions that happened in the past year, they're not feeling that they have that budget to do things to boost morale in the office. So if you didn't have any money, what would you do?
Okay, I don't have any money. I'm going to try to pretend I work for the IRS. I'm not saying they don't have any money, but I'm on the phone all day long with these calls. Some are very sad. Most of them are very miserable because they're frustrated. And I listen to that all day long. Now, how do I work myself out of that? Take a lot of breaks, probably. But I say, okay, I'm there to help the people. That's my job. And I could have no job and not helping anybody, including myself. And somebody's going to say, oh, you're naive. But that's the way I would do it. Listen, been there, done it. And that's the way I convinced myself and the people around, okay, we're going to get some work. But let's just be happy that we have some work.
Yeah. And I think most people realize that. And I have a good friend who's at the IRS. And one of the things that she said is that it has been a morale issue lately. I've got another friend who works with, I believe his office is Justice. They recently, to get out of the office and they all paid their own way, they went out and saw Hunger Game. It was an opportunity for them to get out of the office together, to do something that they wanted to do and spend some time away from the office a little bit. Whether they did this on work time or their own time, I don't know. I know that they paid their own way. But it was a way to get away from the office and spend a little time with colleagues that you're not in that pressure cooker.
Okay. Now, John's been in the pressure cooker. John was a pressure cooker, but he kept his
truth. I cook pressure, yes.
But you also did it fairly. You tell me, how did you work out of the tough spots when staff was kind of...
Well, first of all, this is the worst period I've ever heard of in government. It was never quite this bad when I was a federal employee. There was a period in the 90s when, during the Clinton administration, where there was a lot of downsizing and where, you know, well, you're lucky to have a job type of thing, which doesn't always do the trick for people. But... So I never really encountered what people seem to be going through today, but I had individual employees whose morale was, and I'm thinking of my final agency particularly, where I inherited some employees. I hasten to add, I didn't bring them in, but you couldn't have made them happy no matter what you did. There are employees like that, whether times are good or times are bad.
This is true.
And it's not, they never change, but... To the extent that you're going through a time like federal employees ought to be going through now with all the threatened and cuts and so forth, not only the pay freeze, but there's, you know, proposal to cut retirement benefits and so forth and so on. I just say, look, we're all in this together. this too shall pass. Even though there's a lot of talk about, oh, this time these cuts are real. In the past, very few changes have been made to retirement systems and benefits. Now, I'm not suggesting that this won't be the exception, because there are people making money out of, you know, saying, oh, it's going to happen this time. Oh, this time is different. Maybe so. I'm not saying that's not going to be true. But I would just cite history and say maybe they won't be as bad as you think they are.
Okay.
And maybe I'd run some examples from my employees nearing retirement about how the high five works as opposed to the current high three and say, well, it may not be as bad as you think, even if they go to high five. And then I will also remind employees, if they do make some of these changes that are frightening you and depressing you, maybe I would just I would point out there's always a good chance that they will grandfather you. Current employees may not be affected, and that's been part of some of the proposals. New hires after a certain date would be affected, but not necessarily current employees. So I try and inject as much hope and optimism as I could. And one last thing, if you worry about these things and it happens, then you've wasted all this time worrying about it. But if it never happens, you've really wasted all this time worrying about it. So don't worry about it till these draconian proposals are signed into law. Once they're signed into law, then you can, you know, worry about it.
You know, we talked sometime back, probably the last time I was here, about how to know that you've stayed in a job too long. And it went everything from feeling depressed going into work that day to being physically ill. If you recall, that's what we talked about the last time I came in. I think that what people are feeling today is that there's this, I just don't want to be here right now. But I have to remind government workers of a few things. First of all, they do have job security that certainly the private sector doesn't, as you and I, Bob, just talked about with contracting. We don't know that. We don't know the job security that they have. So at least they, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, they don't have to go in and say, I'm having a bad day, I'm going to be fired. So they do have that job security. The one thing that I forgot to mention that is putting more pressure on them is as some contractors are being dropped, they are bringing more work on the people that are in the office. And as that happens, they do feel more pressure to produce more work. But again, I do feel very much so that this is cyclical, that this will happen. The pendulum has now swept to the side of we're going to do the government cuts, we're going to do this and that, and it'll swing back. And there will be a day again, maybe not in the immediate future, but in the near future, where they'll start putting more money back into some of these programs. A couple of other things, though, that I wanted to toss out. I do believe that morale in an office, I couldn't agree more with what John said, that it is not your responsibility to make everybody happy. However, I think that the responsibility of having a good place to work is everybody's responsibility in terms of being civil to each other and trying to make it a good environment. Everyone from the managers to the secretaries. This isn't something that it's only the manager's responsibility to make everybody feel good. And if you think back to some of the things that do make offices, and it may sound a little trite on some of these things, but how good do you feel when somebody makes you a birthday cake and comes in and says, you know, because it's your birthday, we're going to have a little party today. Or it's your anniversary and you don't even remember what the date was that you started. If somebody pays attention to that, their start date. I had to laugh because recently I had an expired password on a computer account. And the people asked me, well, when did you start working here? And I said, I don't remember. And they said, well, what's your anniversary date? And I said, well, it goes to understand the day I started. I don't remember my anniversary date. And he said, well, those are the security questions to get your password. So you can't get your password if you can't answer the security questions. So, but it would have been really nice if at some point, and I started thinking if people would remember, this is the anniversary date of when you're starting, or this is a month that these people are celebrating anniversary dates of how many years they've been here. Things like that can go a long way to just boost morale in a place. It's simple stuff. It doesn't mean that it has to be something you spend a lot of money on. It means just something to recognize the person right now, not just as government, but as a person. And I think, and you mentioned the IRS people. I've actually talked on the phone with some IRS people recently that have the best sense of humor, and they are funny, and they are fun, and they are helpful. And I think that the frustration with calling an IRS person is the hour-long wait before you get an IRS person, not necessarily the person you talk with.
All right, I'll tell you the secret of how not to wait that long off air.
Okay, I want to know that. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to know that. Okay, a couple of other things, and I'm opening it to the two of you, too. I just wanted to kind of throw a few things in here. Contest in an office. We saw how much morale was raised. I know it wasted some time in the office, but so does low morale. Low morale really wastes a lot of time in the office. But think about the, and I'm not a big basketball fan, but what did we just go through, the brackets and picking the teams and all of that stuff. I know Kansas is playing. Kansas and Kentucky. Yeah. And it was Louisville and Ohio were the other. I do know the very end, but I haven't paid attention to basketball getting this far. So, but things like that, contest in the office, things where, you know, it just all kinds of little things that will kind of, and it doesn't cost a lot of money to do these things, but it makes a difference for morale.
Okay.
Yeah, I would also, if I were a supervisor, manager, I would, but particularly a supervisor, first line, because I think it starts there. I would gather my employees periodically into a conference room or my office if they all fit, and just talk about these concerns and say, look, I know these are tough times. There are these proposals, and I'd go tick them off. I'd, you know, go through one of my causes column, who scares the bejesus out of people frequently. And I would say, you know, are there any concerns about this? I might find out that there aren't. But if there are, we can address those. We can go through, you know, point by point and at least let them vent their worries and concerns and anything else they want to, you know,
and John,
I think that's good in the best of times. I think it's particularly good in the worst of times.
If I may also add a footnote to that, John, not only in an open setting of everyone, but be more open to one-on-ones. Be a lot more open to spending time with a person that is feeling that they are really feeling the pressure of the job right now. They say that good managers spend 80% of their time on people problems. It's true. And it means that not everything can be solved in an open session, but be available for more one-on-one sessions.
And how do you let people know, now you're the boss again, I'm coming to you. How do I know that I can come to you?
Open door policy, you know, come in, or if you're a very, very busy manager, schedule a time. Say, I'm going to turn off the phones. We're going to get out of my office so that they can't find me here. We'll go to a conference room. We'll talk away from here if you want. That's a key thing. You've got to prove to your employees that you really are receptive to listening to them. One of the gentlemen I worked for over at the State Department, he's now retired, so I have no problem bringing him up as an individual. I loved working with this guy. It always amazed me that when I'd walk in, he wouldn't answer his phone, wouldn't touch it. And I said, "Why do you do that?" He said, "I feel if people have spent the time to come to my office, I'm going to give them my undivided attention." And I thought, that's cool. Because how many times have you sat in somebody's office and had them field phone calls while you're sitting there? And it's just, we're in an age right now where people feel like they have to be electronically tied into everything. Yeah. And they don't. You have to turn things off every once in a while and talk to the person. And remember, I'm a big fan of communication.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's nothing as rude, I think, if you're sitting on a one-on-one, or even a group, but particularly a one-on-one, and you grab your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's simply not good manners.
But you've got to be more sensitive to it now than you've ever been before.
Yeah, perhaps.
Because
yeah.
It is when people say, well, I tried to talk to you, and you're not listening, and, you know, you've got to be more open to that. I think But understand, managers, particularly mid-level managers, are feeling the pressure just as much as their staff, and they've got to make the times. And the other part of that is don't ignore it. Do not ignore it. It will not go away. It will fester. It will grow. Resentment will build. Don't ignore it.
Yeah, and I would tell my boss, look, if I don't pick up my phone, either I'm out of my office or I'm with somebody. And I would tell him, it's my policy, if I'm talking to somebody about business, I'm not answering the phone.
Yeah.
And if they say, oh, yeah, you better, well, that's another issue. Then you'll have to deal with that. But I would alert my boss. That's going to be my policy.
Let me reverse the role. Mm-hmm. And not being the cheerleader, let's say that you're my boss and I have a cloud over my head all the time. And I may be affecting other people. Now, I'm not going to come to you and say, how do I get rid of the cloud? How do you come to me and get rid of the cloud?
Well, it's funny. I'm thinking of the movie that Cher was in years ago. Snap out of it! No. I mean, we've all had gloomy gusses. We've all worked with gloomy gusses. The question is it chronic? Is it something that somebody's going through for a short time? Very dear friend of mine lost her husband recently. I mean, it's been 6 months, but 6 months is a short period of time to lose a soulmate. You don't get over that overnight. So, no, you know, this is not a case where you say, well, the last 6 months wouldn't be the best way to judge what this person is most of the time in her life. So when you are dealing with someone, is it chronically or you're just always? I had a guy years ago worked for me, and he used to have these really dark moods. And it was a cloud that settled over the entire room. And I pulled him aside and I said, you know what? When you're feeling this way, it's okay with me. Just take it outside. Go for a walk. Go for a drive. Don't leave it in the office where it spreads to everybody else around you. And I said, if there's anything I can do to help you out of it, let me know. If there's not, take it. You know, just walk with it. Go out. And it worked. I mean, we didn't have that cloud moving into the newsroom all the time. But I guess it's a case-by-case basis. Would you agree, John?
Yeah, I mean, and it could be something like you're bound at some point in your career as a manager to have a bipolar employee as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, particularly in the past, these people didn't recognize them. I think now with all the publicity that more people have become attuned and aware of bipolarity. So I can't believe that, you know, years can go by without having a bipolar employee if you're a manager of a group of any size. So that's a possible, but that's something to deal with a little differently, but to certainly be on the watch for it. Don't assume that this person is down for no reason.
Right.
Maybe down because they can't help but being down.
Well, I will tell you what I did one time with a radio station. And we had an environment where when you were taking phone calls, a lot of the people out on the street and a lot of people would call in and they would cuss you out because they were having a bad day. And I was having a hard time with this because I've never been a type of person that deals with this well. I mean, people didn't yell and scream in my family. They didn't cuss. We didn't cuss at all. So it was good for me in an environment with microphones that we didn't do this. But I was having a hard time having people call in and cuss me out because they were having a bad day. So I went to the manager and I said, look, you know, may I hang up on them when they start doing this to me? I'm not doing anything to them. It's called. Every single time that this happened, and it happened 6 times in the following 2 months, that people would call in and they'd start cussing. I'd hang up, and you could hear the amount of time for this person to call the boss. And then they would call me back very contrite and apologetic. And it was fine after that. But I think that if you have something that is spreading, and it wasn't that everybody in the place did this. It was that there were a few and it was spreading and it became a problem. And if it does, it's up to the boss to set the tone and say, no, I don't want any of my employees to be abused. And if you're having a bad day, take it out, but don't take it out on each other.
I have another rule. If somebody gets on the phone, will not hang up. And I said, listen, I don't hang up on anybody, but I am going to put you on hold. And when you're through talking, you can hang up.
Right.
But I will not hang up on you.
And I don't hang up on people. But when the person calls in and all they're doing is raging at you, it got to the point where it was serious. And I have never hung up on anybody else, and I don't. But this was a case where the cursing had to stop. And, you know, I think it's incumbent on a manager. When you do have somebody, you mentioned bipolar, when you do have somebody, it does spread to other people, and the behavior spreads to other people. And you have to make sure that, you know, everybody is addressing it to their best. And the key is there going to be a reaction to what's happening around you, which is emotional, or is there going to be a response? And a response is a well-thought-out reaction, I guess, for lack of a better term, to what's going on around you, not an emotional one. And you have to get so that everybody is on the same page in civility in the workplace. And we forget that. I mean, civility is one of the first casualties of close quarters when things go bad. Another thing I wanted to point out, and it goes back to my communication stuff, ignore the political rhetoric right now. You mentioned some of the things that are being published. Remember, politicians, oh my gosh, they're posturing right now. Go figure that one out. I'm going to get rid of this federal agency. I'm going to get rid of that federal agency when I'm president. You know, all this posturing is going on.
If he can remember the federal agency.
Yeah, if he can remember the three federal agencies. But the bottom line is, this is posturing. Will this come to pass? Do you know how hard it is to eliminate a federal agency in this country? No. You know, you've got to ignore the political rhetoric right now. And not take every word out of a politician's mouth seriously. Look at the bigger picture. And it's not any single statement that's going to make or break anybody's job right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of this intemperate, I would call it, emotiveness from members of Congress are just for consumption back home in their district, and it may be, and they may fear a primary challenge. So a lot of this stuff is just that may be scaring you is only that and will never come to pass. Because using your example, to get rid of a federal agency, it's the difficulty of doing that, whether it should or shouldn't be done, that's a separate issue, is that you've got all these committee chairmen in Congress itself blocking it. It's usually not the president or the executive branch that makes it so difficult. It's the Congress themselves. So you've got one Congress who might want to get rid of energy, but you've got another congressman who's chairman of the Energy Committee or something who says, no way. And so it is very difficult. So, and a lot of this stuff is just
I went through the merger of the USIA, United States Information Agency, into the State Department when I was a contractor. And it wasn't that people were, there was some attrition with time, but this wasn't a case where all of a sudden half the people were fired because, you know, they were merging together. No, it got, state got bigger. That's what happened. You don't just get rid of a federal agency that easily. So you have to think about it in those terms. And another opportunity that I think is a big, big deal right now that managers have to think about, even though the pressure's on to produce more work and produce more work and produce more work, offer more training opportunities. And do understand it comes from a background where I am a trainer. And this is my bread and butter, is I am a trainer. But I have to say, training opportunities, getting somebody out of the office, working on their skills a little bit, working on just, you know, being away from the daily grind and doing something different for themselves is a huge deal right now. And the training opportunities are there for government workers like they are not anyplace else. And take advantage of them. Take advantage.
And the training, too, this is not a commercial. We don't have any commercials on the show, but we train mid-careers, beginning careers a little bit, and a lot pre-retirement. But the mid-careers, you know, we stress that these are your benefits. This is what's going to happen to you over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Things aren't real bad. Whether you like your job, you can shift to another job. And I'm not so sure that's quite as easy as it used to be. So as I think either John or Mike said once, the federal government is like a cafeteria line. Where do you want to go to work?
Yeah. Well, and I that actually, you know, with at the risk of having nothing to say in the last 20 minutes of this program, I do want to point out.
I don't think that will ever happen.
But that was one of the things I was going to point out when it says, what do you do? How do you handle this? Except the things you can't change, which is, you know, if you've got somebody who's carrying a dark cloud over their head, you're not going to change that person. Limit your time around them because I'll tell you, it's toxic. It's infectious. You know, dealing with toxic people, you know that the more you're around them, the more likely you are to catch it. So, you know, limit your time in dealing with really, really toxic people if you can avoid it. But one of the things that's happening in government agencies right now is there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of movement because some contracts were pulled in-house, new opportunities were made available in new positions. There have been cases now that as attrition happens, people are shifting jobs. And the preferential treatment across the board is going to government employees and veterans. So government employees, you know that if you're already in the government, you've got first shot at these jobs. There's not a whole lot of people being brought in from the outside. As a contractor, I don't have the same shot at these jobs that somebody in the government does. So remember that you can move and it's an opportunity. And if you don't get a job, ask for a debriefing. Figure out what you can do better on the next application. I have to tell you, if you have any doubt that there are a lot of jobs open right now, go to usajobs.gov. There are a lot of jobs open and there's a lot of opportunities for people to shift.
In your current experience, mm-hmm. if you were to, let's take beginning, mid, and pre-retirement, would you find the unhappiness level at a greater percentage within one of those groups? In other words, is somebody kind of late, mid-career, very unhappy because of these things that might happen? Or does the pre-retiree go, what do I care? I've got my years in, and if they changed X, Y, and Z, do you see a profile and the new person might not know enough to...
You're right. I don't think the new people, the ones just coming in, by the way, there are still new hires, you know, there are still things happening across the board. There's still recruiting out there for government employees. And for the new people coming in, certainly they haven't been there long enough to have, you know, to have the thick skin and you know, the stuff that... I think the longer you're in a job, the more restless you get. I mean, understand that in the private sector today, they're saying that a person graduating from college is going to change jobs a dozen times and change careers three times. That doesn't happen with government employees. Government employees are in it for the long haul. That is the one segment of the workforce that still has this, you trade off having these salary bumps when you change jobs to having job security. So they are in it for the long haul. So yeah, I think that if you were to, but I'm being very general here, understand it's not everybody, but I'd say mid-career on are the ones that are more restless. Human nature is to move on, take on new challenges, have new things to do. And if they're feeling stifled and they're getting more and more of the same old work, I think that's more mid-level to late career. A lot of people, and both of you know, that people that are waiting for their retirement date are just putting up with things. So a lot of them may have some I'm just biding my time. I'm just waiting for my last 4 or 5 years.
You hear that a lot. You know, as soon as I'm eligible, I'm out of here. And then, lo and behold, they're not out of here.
Yeah, they're
maybe
eligible,
three,
they
four,
stay.
5 years down the road, they finally retire. But
and everybody around them is going, weren't you going to retire?
Yeah.
You're going to leave here.
Yeah, but when people become eligible for retirement and are still working and say, yes, I can afford, I've looked at the numbers, I've been to an NITP retirement seminar, and I know I can afford to retire, but I don't, either because I like my job or I like the people I work with and I would miss not seeing them 5 times a week or whatever it is. And I'm just not ready to retire. Well, you shouldn't. But I have been told countless times, including by my wife, who worked a few years after she was eligible, that it was such a freeing feeling to hit that eligibility date, knowing that if I wanted to walk out the door today, I could do it.
Well, you know,
and it's almost a universal feeling of... not exactly euphoria or joy, for some that's true, but certainly it's a great comfort to know if anything I don't like happens, I'm out of here. I can retire and do something else if
and
I want.
Actually, John, I'm glad you brought that up because my experience, remember, is a little bit of the flip side of the NITP seminars. After the number crunching of several days, I come in and say, what do you want to do with the next part of your life? What do you want to transition into? And they're all kind of scared to death because they're saying, I have to work a lot longer than I thought I was going to have to work. So a lot of people that are feeling a little discouraged now because they feel like they have to work longer than they were planning on working. Those folks, too, tend to have morale issues if they feel like they're stuck longer.
Yeah.
Now, there are certainly other people who, and there was a wonderful person I met at a recent seminar, and it was, hey, I don't want to leave here because I've got friends here. I've got work here I enjoy doing. There's absolutely no reason I want to leave this because if I leave and go work the other part of my life, you know, he gave me examples of things that he would be doing, and he said, I'd rather be here. So, yeah, there are some people that are very happy to stay longer on their terms, but some of them are feeling the pressure now that when they're told how much money they're going to need and how long they're likely to live now. I mean, consider that a lot of these retirement plans were drawn up when people were expected to retire at 65, die at 75. Now, you know, my 90-year-old father, you know, people into their hundreds.
Yeah.
People are not, you're having to plan for longer periods of time, and it takes more money. So a lot of people are feeling a little restless right now, not just in government, but if they thought they were going to work 30 years and now they say, I've got to work longer, that's obviously something they'd be discouraged about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very depressing, I would think.
Okay, let me take it another notch up. Let me say I'm a manager of managers. Or you're a manager of managers. And how do you identify the one with the cloud over their head? And maybe their people got clouds over their head. And how do you then talk to the manager of people?
Well, again, it's I did a course years ago that I designed that was communicating up and down the chain of command. And it's how do you, and I have to tell you, the best mid-level managers are buffers. They don't let the top hear all the grief from below them, and they don't take out all the stuff of their bosses on them, on their subordinates. They are good buffers. Those are the mid-level. The ones at the top, you know, it's easy to say, yes, you should, you know, you should do this, you should do that. Bottom line is, set yourself as a good example. You know, if you don't want people coming in and being gruff and having, you know, this cloud over their head, you come in every day and talk to people and spend some time with not only the people that you oversee, but with their group as well. You have to have an open door policy to them as well. Not by any way stepping on the toes of your mid-level manager, but at the same time, setting the tone that you expect your managers to offer. And to have your managers getting in touch with you and working with them to resolve things in a positive way. The worst managers are the mid-level people are the ones that say, my boss took it out on me that you're having a bad day, so I'm taking it out on my staff. No.
Yeah, to amplify on that, the worst managers I ever encountered were very skilled at managing up. What I mean by that is courting their boss, but were miserable to the people below them. And I encountered that too often. Those were the worst.
Really?
Yes. Of course, that didn't impede, unfortunately, that didn't impede their careers because they were sucking up, but they certainly weren't sucking down, if that's a phrase. But those were the worst. And yeah. I bet whoever's listening out there who's currently employed can relate to that. They've had at least one, if not several, like that.
Right. It is about open communications. I mean, that's making people feel that they've that they are being respected in the workplace, that their work is being appreciated, and it a few kind words
doesn't
and
take any time.
It doesn't. But it has to be sincere. I mean, if you suddenly came in and Bob, you were my manager, and suddenly came in and it's Oh, Nan, you're doing a great job today. I'd be looking at you like, okay, why? What's up? You know, you have to be sincere. But, you know, I would say today is a new day. It's the beginning of the rest of your life. Come on, start, you know, that sounds cliche, spreading a little sunshine. But honestly, just, you know, showing a little bit of respect and appreciation for the people around you, it goes a long way.
So I went in this morning. And I had heard something on the radio that one of the Mega Million people in Delaware worked at a McDonald's. Now, whether this is true or not.
Oh, Maryland? The Maryland ticket was in Baltimore.
Yeah. And had bought tickets for a number of the coworkers, but was not going to give any money to the coworkers because they bought a ticket on the side that was their ticket. So I went into the person that does this at our office. Believe it or not, accountants buy lottery tickets.
Well, so does my accountant.
And can't wait for it to. And I said to her, I said, I just want to thank you. Not only do you do this, but you photocopy and then give every, you know, run through the email and give everybody a picture of the ticket. Now, whether you buy one on the side or not, doesn't make any difference to me. You've pretty much said this. And she looked at me like, oh, thank you. And a good heart. And I don't know that it made her day, but she was happy for the moment.
A funny lottery ticket story is my mother was from the area of Red Bud, Illinois, very, very tiny town in Illinois, which was one of the lottery tickets.
Now it's rocketed to the top.
It has. And I, you know, I actually called some relatives there this weekend and said, do I have millionaire relatives, you know? But it was funny because my father, now realizing that that's where my mother was from, and said, oh, you know, I didn't get a lottery ticket. I said, Dad, you did. You know, I bought it for you, but we didn't win. And a friend and I buy tickets together all the time. And we've got a pack that, you know, we'll share it. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous to win hundreds of millions of dollars and turn around and say, but this was my personal ticket when you're buying with a group.
There was just a lawsuit where
the guy lost. He went in and said, this was my personal ticket, not the one I bought with all the, and he lost. And think about how much money the lawyers made off that suit. You know, that's ridiculous to go. So, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that really does demoralize a workplace. And it's not like McDonald's is going to be the goal for so many people anyway. You know, you work there and those people are working hard at a McDonald's. And to go in and say, but I've won hundreds of million and I'm not sharing it is, you know, I sure hope that's not the case, Bob. I really hope that's not the case.
I hope it's not the case. Now, let's talk about group happiness. When we buy the lottery tickets, it's a buzz. What am I going to do with the money now? And then they come, do you want one? I said, are you crazy? If we win, I'm going to be the only one here. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, for $2, I got some dreams. And then, you know, somebody will say, well, what are you going to do with yours? And of course, we never win, but it's fun.
But, you know, that
moment was
so much fun across the country. I don't think I would have stood in a line for 6 hours in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. But how many workplaces were pulled together at the thought of dreams of, you know, and even the bigger dream, had that reached $1 billion, you know, can you imagine? But it was so much fun to hear people talking about, well, if I had the money, these are the charities I support. If I had the money, you know, would you stay in your house? Would you move? I mean, it was a wonderful time to dream. And I saw a lot of offices sharing that information. Something else, and you talk about potluck. You know, let's get together for a potluck lunch today. Everybody bring something. Let's make it an international today. Let's say, okay, we're going to go, you know, this continent today, that continent, you know, a month from now. Just little things like that where people just pitch in and pull together and have some time together. It goes a long way.
Yeah, we had an employee. This goes years back, but it was an employee, not a supervisor, and he got an idea to have organize, and of course got permission to do this, weekly on Friday afternoons, kind of late in the afternoon, wine and cheese parties, you know. And this was a guy that didn't have, by my observation at least, a lot of social skills. So it gave him a boost. And he got such a kick out of, you know, organizing this activity. And what's not to enjoy? Wine and cheese at late on a Friday afternoon. It really did a lot for morale. And not that I recall morale was bad, but it was a boost. It was something to look forward to. It brought people together. And so
I guess it allows them to go back to their desk if they want to go back to their desk and just come out. And a lot of offices,
yeah,
that kind of stuff
happens.
But
my point is, you don't have to be a supervisor to suggest something like that. Supervisor may have never thought of that. But the supervisors had a lot of fun with it too, you know, because they got to drink wine and have some cheese on Fridays.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's really an office-wide responsibility. I was the one that always made birthday cakes. I got burned when I was at the Arch in St. Louis, and one of my colleagues told me it was his birthday, and I brought in a cake and just to find out it wasn't his birthday, and he just wanted cake. But it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun just to have a little bit of a break in your day. And, you know, and I've got to say, a little bit of food goes a long way.
Well, we do that.
Workers.
But it seems like we have a drought period for like 3 or 4 months. Now, there's only 20 people there. So, and so we pick a time when we've had a birthday cake drought, and it's Moses Malone's birthday. Who knows when his birthday was? But it's Moses. It's just to bridge the gap. And everybody comes in, and we sing happy birthday to Moses and cut up the ice cream cake and, you know, go back to work. It's fun. I have to ask one question. It's got or answer one question. It's totally off subject, but we are getting down to the close here. We did have an email.
Good.
Now, this is on the TSP, and here we go. And we have to answer our emails because that's what we advertise the show for. Anyway, I'm 50 years old, and I'm contributing the maximum to my TSP. Should I split my contribution amount between the new Roth and the, if you will, traditional TSP, or should I leave it alone? I already have a Roth IRA with Vanguard, and I am contributing the maximum to that account. Now, not knowing anything else about the individual, I think I would stay with the TSP given the age. Now, why? The traditional
the
TSP.
Traditional.
Because
tax
it's tax deductible. Now, you're saying, yeah, you're just saying that because you're an accountant. No. This thing wholly spins off of economics. It does not spin off of tax. So the moth to the flame is, I want a Roth IRA because it's non-taxable when it comes out. Well, it's non-deductible when it goes in. So are you in a bracket where you would enjoy the most at, say, 50? You're probably in your peak earning years, and that deduction is going to mean probably more to you than the Roth. Now, I don't know anything about the individual. This is a very general comment. Now, later on, when your bucket is full as the traditional TSP and you want to do a few years of the Roth TSP, it will cost you because your tax rate is so high. But if you don't touch that money for a very long period of time, that would be the way to go. That would just be my answer, not knowing anything else about the individual, although this individual does email us a fair amount of time with some very good questions. Now, he asks a second one. And I'm going to have to lean on you a little, John, and maybe you, Nan, because I don't really want to hear the answer to this, but here it is. When should I look into a long-term care plan? And do you have any suggestion on which plans are better than the federal plan? Now, the federal plan is pretty hard to beat in the sense that no preconditions, correct, John?
Oh, no. You can be turned down for the long-term federal plan as easily as a private plan. It's not like your health plan where, you know, they have to take everybody, the health benefit system. This is works differently. You can be turned down for long-term care. If it looks like you're going to need long-term care in the foreseeable future, you're not going to get long-term care insurance from the government or anybody else. Now, that's a very broad general statement. That should not, if you have any doubts, well, I don't know if I can get long-term care or not, apply anyway, either privately or with the federal plan, because you may surprise yourself. I knew a person who had a lot of health issues, but could have gotten approved for the federal plan, but went private because he found a cheaper rate. What I would do when you're shopping for long-term care, I'd first go to the federal site, ltcfeds.com, and they have a calculator. You can read about, you know, there are your various options, and then you say, well, if I have these various options, what's it going to cost me? And the calculator works like a charm. It'll tell you. And then you can take that cost and those benefits and shop around if you choose. I ended up with going private. I could have gone federal, but ironically, I ended up with the same underwriters that underwrite the federal plan. But that's just, but in a private policy, and I did save money on premiums for essentially the same benefits I wanted with the federal.
Okay, that's good. The other thing is we do have the federal long-term care folks come on the show many times during the year, and they make a nice presentation, but they're frank as well. So you could go dial back probably a month or two, and you can listen to them talk. Very informative. Yeah. But they will go on both sides, and just not they don't sell anything.
We don't have enough time left in this show, but at some point I can tell you a story about a person I didn't have long-term care in my family, and it's not a good situation.
Okay, Nan, back to you. You got about a minute and a half, maybe a minute.
All right. You can't just give it time in your office. Open communications. Open communications. If you are in a management role, encourage an open door policy. Do things in your office that are fun activities. Bring in food, drink every once in a while. Encourage training, and know that this too shall pass, and ignore the political rhetoric.
All right, and listen to the show, and listen to John, and celebrate birthday cakes even if there isn't one. All righty? So, John, final comments?
When you're in your car this week, watch out for the Easter Bunny. That's all I can come up with right now.
Okay, and make sure you bought the proper insurance. Anyway, Andrew is telling us it's about time, or keep talking, Andrew, huh?
Okay. Is he saying keep talking?
Okay.
Okay, we didn't give my email yet.
Go.
Because Nan, if you have any questions after the show and you want to follow up, it's Nan, N-A-N, at breakersconsulting.com.
Do that slow.
Nan, N-A-N, at breakers, B-R-E-A-K-E-R-S, consulting, all one word, .com. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about communication, workplace morale, transitions, anything that you need.
Did you and Andrew practice that? Anyway, thanks for listening, you all. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.